Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program, final hour. I want to talk about this Africa Summit that took place in Venezuela, and I want to mention there's a connection between that and Brick City, concepts of urban renewal, community development, something that Minister Farrakhan just recently stated. But if you look up on the screen, you should see a image, handsome young man image of someone that, to me, his work, his words, his presence not being featured in Brick City takes away from what would have been an otherwise, you know, very good presentation. Someone not a stranger to people who listen to my show, and definitely not the people of Newark who know him. If you want to see the kind words that he said about me on my site, CedricMuhammad.com, you can go right over there on the endorsement page. But I speak of no other individual than the person of Marcellus Bishop Allen. If you're doing work in Newark, you know who Bishop is. And Bishop, the visual, the image of him did appear in Brick City, but for some reason, he was not featured. But if you know anything about the work of Saving Ourselves in Newark, the work that they've done with young people to work to broker peace between various street organizations and to give life skills, job training skills, conflict resolution skills, manhood training skills to young people who are in that lifestyle, then you know that you cannot overlook the work of Bishop Marcellus Bishop Allen and Saving Ourselves in Newark, New Jersey. They are part of the BlackElectric.com business and building community. I'm not speaking of just word of mouth. I've had a chance to interact with them. As genuine as it comes, as real as it gets. And in some ways, it's not a surprise maybe that Bishop is not a prominent figure in the Brick City documentary on Newark, New Jersey, because that's really his style. He's laid back, low key. And I think he cares a lot more about what goes on behind in the nooks and crannies, things that are not really covered well. But I have to say that it was whether it was a mistake, an oversight, an error, it took away from the storyline. There were things that were featured in Brick City that were put in motion or positively contributed to by Bishop that were not acknowledged as such. Didn't take away from anybody else that was featured in the film, but it takes away from the truth in telling the complete story. So I want to say, though, that there really should be another documentary on Newark that would tell a more of a complete story. I think the influence of the Sharp James era has to be included in any story. You can't just start with Cory Booker. You got to go back to Sharp James, at least. You have to look at the community action programs in Newark. You have to look at not just Raz Baraka, but Amiri Baraka. Newark was a very unique city, and I've talked about this. It was a unique mixture of the Black Power and Civil Rights Movement. So a lot of the history of Newark, I don't think, was really addressed in Brick City, and that's fine. It did a good job of telling another story, but it's incomplete. But I have to say, to not include Saving Ourselves in light of what they do, and actions speak louder than words. Let me throw up the Saving Ourselves flag real quick. If you want to take a look, that's their image and logo, Saving Ourselves. Just wonderful. We had a chance to interact with them. They came down to Washington, D.C. to share with us their work and to get better acquainted. I met Crack, Bear, Pop, Jody, Bishop at that time. We talked serious business. We had fun, went bowling. It was a great time. So, again, I want to just stress, Saving Ourselves is an important part of the work, the good work that's going on in Newark. Many of the people in that documentary were influenced or have high regard for Saving Ourselves. So I just wanted to mention them again. And I always had to thank Bishop. It was actually through Bishop that I met Jawi. I met Jawi through Bishop. So just another good reason for me to be grateful for that man and those, the people that he's touched, the lives he's meant so much to. So Let's do another film. Let's do a more accurate portrayal of Newark. Let's not wait on two film directors outside of Newark to come in and tell our story. That's one of the drawbacks and barriers that we have to overcome, is telling our story ourselves accurately, and that involves business. Stop doing everything nonprofit as charity or as a damn favor. You got talented filmmakers and producers. You got all kind of artists and musicians. You got people that work at TV stations. It does not take the Sundance Channel to do an accurate story on Newark. You could do that joint right in the hood. You got cats right now used to make rap videos out of work. Still got the old cameras, no high definition yet. They still can be of help. Put something together. Okay, let me get back to the Africa South America Summit, because this was a historic meeting. Muammar Gaddafi got to come to the United States and also go down to Venezuela. And let me just say this, that meeting was more, that meeting's been in the works for a while. I know about it because of my work with the African Union. That was actually a meeting. Some of you all don't know why Muammar Gaddafi is, you know, featured so prominently. He's the chairman of the African Union. And this is one of the reasons why I was not gonna, let me put the camera on me. This is one of the reasons why I was not gonna play the Larry King interview of Muammar Gaddafi or the GPS interview with Fareed Zakaria. It was weak as hell. Weak as hell. If you saw the interview, you know it was weak. Fareed Zakaria and Larry King did not even deal with Africa. If you're talking to this, this shows you the disrespect for Africa. You're talking to the chairman of the African Union, Brother Muammar Gaddafi. You don't ask him any questions about that. All you care about is Pan Am 103 and whether Libya is responsible for blowing up a plane. You're insulting me. I'm not going to promote that. So Hugo Chavez also went to Libya to celebrate the 40-year anniversary of Muammar Gaddafi being in power. Now, I have to now deal with somebody on the continent of Africa. Let me play the audio of this economist who I caught on SABC, South Africa Broadcasting Corporation. And with all due respect to all my African friends, you all know I'm new to this, but you know, some Africans feel that they have a PhD in black history as it relates to America. And as I've cautioned some of my African friends, just because President Barack Obama was elected president doesn't mean everything is all good, everything is sweet in America. It's not. Just like when Nelson Mandela became president of South Africa, we started acting stupid over here, acting like everybody was good in Africa. Not the case. But I had to say something, because some of the African intellectuals are no better than the black intellectuals here, because you are... it's as if you can't, I don't want to say that. Let me play the clip. I bit my tongue, actually. Let me play the clip of this economist who was asked to critique the African South American Summit. Very pessimistic, I'll say that. His name is Peter Karunga, I believe. Here's what he had to say about the meeting in Venezuela. This is a program called Point Blank on SABC. I recommend it. Very good discussion. Point Blank. SABC. You know I watch all the international channels. This is Peter Karunga, asked about it.
If you ask many of us, we see beauty, we see big tables, we see limousines. And I think after that, you know nothing else. Unfortunately, a lot of people are becoming to think that way, which is very sad. Ideally, this summit should be taken seriously for what they should be. But more than often, the same leaders who are there today, some of them, were in a same conference in Harare in 1984. I remember that. So you got to be able to ask yourself. But as academic, we are guarded.
So it's a self-serving interest. If my interest is in South Africa or Zimbabwe only, my focus is just going to be on my country. Is that the idea?
This one, I'll reserve my right not to comment, if you don't mind.
There's also the fact of a development finance, a finance development. Now, Muammar Gaddafi has also mentioned something very critical about a NATO bloc, and we mentioned that a bit earlier. His reason for doing that is to say, wise, regional security on the African continent is also of importance. Was that the proper platform for him to bring up this point?
If you look at the UN conference, for the first time we have had some form of unanimous decision to destroy all the nuclear nukes.
That's the recent G20
correct.
Summit.
That's
Thank
what you. Happened. Now, you hear other people saying we need to establish a military bloc. So you see contradiction. The question is, like you said, are these opportunistic conferences or somebody to throw an idea? We really don't know, because still we have to respect our leaders, because they are our leaders.
Correct.
Whichever way they go there, we have to say they are elected. But on hindsight, the issue today is, can we get our people out of this quagmire of poverty? Anybody talking anything else, in my view, is a little bit illusionary.
There's also a discussion at the summit, or there was a discussion at the summit in relation to a South America African banking financial institution. Also, Muammar Gaddafi has also mentioned something about currency as well, an African currency or currency for Africa. The mention of this, what do you think the agenda is? Is this a correct approach at this particular time to talk about the development of financial institution for both countries?
I think nobody can ignore the fact that in terms of the world status quo today, the North is very mighty in all due respect. And if the leaders feel that the Southern Africa need a forum that can articulate and effectively correct the imbalances, nobody can quarrel with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, maybe we should come back a little bit, because I'm talking about the continent.
Yes.
And ask ourselves. The AU has transformed, we were told it's going to transform.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many what we call regional bodies. Now, if we go start another one, the question is, shall we either abolish what we already have, or you're going to have ZADC, COMESA, East Africa, the Venezuela Conference, part of the United Nations, all of them have probably different agendas. In my view, we need to rethink very hard whether we are just playing with the terminologies or whether we can effectively implement what is possible for our people. I keep on saying,
mm-hmm.
the fundamental challenge Africa faces, no matter which conference we go, is our people are saying almost the poverty level is unacceptable.
All right, let me even-handedly deal with this. Mr. Peter Karunga is an economic analyst. Now, here's the thing. He's evidently Muammar Gaddafi and some of the leaders, well, Gaddafi mainly, they proposed a military bloc like NATO. He called it SATO. And Mr. Karunga interpreted that as a contradiction or even delusional, because he said at the same time that African leaders were calling for no nuclear weapons or disarmament nuclear wise, they were calling for a security bloc. Well, here's my question though to Mr. Karunga. Does Africa ever have the right to defend themselves? I mean, who's really defending Africa right now? If somebody were to invade Kenya or South Africa or even Egypt, but just say Congo, if a foreign power were to come in directly, overtly, not covertly, which is normally how they do it, what would Africa be able to do? They don't have no army. Now, here's my thing with how some of the Africans have a problem with Muammar Gaddafi. And this is a contradiction. I'll give you a perfect example. If you can refute it, I'll bow down. I was in Africa. I was speaking to an individual from I don't even want to say what country she's from, because some of y'all may figure out who I'm talking about. But she was from a sub-Saharan African country, and she wanted to know what I thought of Muammar Gaddafi. So I gave her my view, which was overwhelmingly positive with a few criticisms. So I asked her, what was your view? So this sister told me that she thinks Gaddafi's eccentric. little strange. He comes up with things that are just outlandish, this, that, and the other. So she says he does do a lot of good, though. So I said to her, this is what I keep hearing from Africans. You don't really trust Gaddafi. You're suspicious of him. He got little flamboyant, eccentric style, which I never heard a black person really having a problem with, little flamboyance. You feel me? But in any event, that was the critique of Brother Gaddafi. So I said, well, who are the leaders that have the backbone and the spine that he has that are not as flamboyant that we can trust? And there is none. Now, let me give you a perfect example of what I'm talking about in real time. And this relates to this whole idea of people not wanting Africa to have an army to defend itself. When the whole matter of the Somali pirates was going on, and you know that I spent a lot of time writing about this at CedricMuhammad.com, I explained that the reason why the Somali youth and some of the Somali entrepreneurs and individuals had become pirates, quote unquote, was because a lot of the ships that were coming into that part of East Africa were dumping nuclear, chemical, and electronic waste into the coastland of Somalia, and they were also taking advantage of the fact that Somalia does not have a strong government and no military and no coast guard. So some of the wealthy ship companies and fishing companies will come into Somalia and just take fish. And I had my little princess come on and talk about phytoplankton. Within 100 miles of every coastline, particularly in that part of Africa, you have phytoplankton. This is the food that fish eat. So fish were drawn to the coastline of East Africa, and they were actually just ripe to be picked. So Africa didn't have the coast guard and the trolleys to patrol their own neighborhood and become wealthy off of their own fish. So the West, the multinational corporations, companies from Canada, all over, even in China, they would come in and fish because there were so many fish there eating the phytoplankton. And any of you all that have young children, you watching SpongeBob, there's a character on there named Plankton. He is the fish food, fish algae. It's called phytoplankton. It's a character named Plankton on SpongeBob. You all know you watch SpongeBob, so don't act like I'm saying something crazy. Just like you watch wrestling, that's why you know who Triple H is, who introduced Floyd Mayweather in his last fight, walked him into the ring. Okay, back to the story. The only person, the only leader who came up with a resolution for the entire African Union to deal with the problem of Somalia and East Africa not having a coast guard was Muammar Gaddafi. He was the only one. I can show you the actual African Union resolution which he introduced in July. If you look at all the hardcore backbone having resolutions that come out of Africa in the African Union, it's from Libya. So you can't have it both ways. You can't call Gaddafi contradictory or delusional when you don't have any alternative leader with the juice that he has and the willingness to come up with these things. Now, Peter Karunga did make a good point about there being overlapping regional bodies. This is one of the things that we're working on in the African Union, First Congress of African Economists, which I'm a member of. He's right. ECOWAS, SADC, you have all these regional bodies that don't work together, don't coordinate policy. But the idea of Africa having one currency, indisputed. Now, I have a book. My next book, I'm already working on it, is dealing with establishing a United States of Africa. And I go into detail. The problem that Africa has is it's never gotten over its tribal fall, which began tens of thousands of years before whites even came to Africa as colonizers. And there were early debates and conferences. All Africa People's Congress was one of them. Before the establishment of the African Union, or the OAU, before that was established, there were debates over how to integrate Africa, how to unite it. They dropped the ball. I'll explain where in my book. So the African Union started out with a beef between two blocks called, one was called the Casablanca Block, the other one was called the Monrovia Block, and they had different ideas on regional development for Africa and whether the continent should become one. That's the root of why we're having this problem today in a disunited Africa. They never resolved how to get over colonialism and the colonial economy. I'll deal with this in my book, God Willing, coming out in January on the United States of Africa, okay, and the work that I'm doing with the African Union, First Congress of African Economists. Send in your comments. That was for OC and Rod from California. If you all got enough red meat on that, let me know. any comments on Brick City, any comments on my relationship with Bishop, my relationship with Jawee, my view of how important they are, Jada, King Jay down in North Carolina, the head Inca, who had a candidacy for city council, which I endorsed. I don't care what nobody say. I'm not going to get in no trouble because I'm not getting no money from none of you anyway. So you're not going to scare me away from supporting somebody who claims affiliation with a street organization of some nation. I love all the tribes, Native American, African. I could care less. I'm down with all of that. But the principle of unity should cause all of us that are in these groups, Muslims, etc., to rise above that. Okay? Send in your comments. We're in hour number 5, the final hour. I had to play a song for the ladies. As I said before, nothing better than having a female friend if you're going through something. Same thing for the women. But some of you all want to convert us brothers into husbands. Just take us as friends. Everybody's not going to be your husband. So I have a song. Just like I played Keith Sweat and refuted his teachings, I will play a song from Regina Bell. Jawee's checked in. I want to acknowledge Jawee. Thank you, brother. He says, great show. Taneem from Willingboro, New Jersey. He says, Cedric, community development is coming to the hood, and it is inevitable. With the smart growth and the sustainable communities movement and just the need for rehabilitating the infrastructure of the inner cities, it is going to happen. Crime is the gnat of progress, but it's going to be dealt with one way or the other. That's right. We all going to deal with crime, and part of it will be very militant. You're not going to just get rid of crime by just teaching. You're going to have to make examples. But the people should have time to reform their behavior. They should have resources that they're currently giving the government, giving back to them to clean us up, particularly in the prisons as well. And then you can start knocking heads in and executing people. But first, let's reform, rehabilitate, and redeem. Pastor Brian Ali from Newark, New Jersey, checks in. He says, peace, my brother. They call the young because they are strong and the old because they are wise. That sounds good in theory. Yet as an old head, I am not blinded by the lights. The issue is that all of us have to be a part of the process in order for it to change for the better. Spending some quality time with a young person doesn't cost nothing but time. Another book that I recommend for young people is I'm Not Crying by Michael Norwood. I'm Not Crying by Michael Norwood from Pastor Brian Ali. Thank you, Pastor, for weighing in. Yes, young men for war, wise old men for counsel. Is that how it's put in the Bible? Yeah, I have Batman music underneath my voice. Hope nobody got a problem with that. So let me run this back, because some of you may not have understood it. Again, it wasn't the G20 summit that you should have had your eyes on. It was the Africa South American summit. Let me give you the audio. Two news reports. One is from a show called World Focus. It's a pretty decent program on public television in America. And the other one is from the South African Broadcasting Corporation, SABC. Here's World Focus first.
In case you missed it this weekend, there was an unusual summit of 30 South American and African leaders. The so-called South-South Summit was held in Venezuela, and it was led by the country's president, Hugo Chavez, and by Muammar Gaddafi of Libya. It addressed a range of concerns, from hunger in Africa to the economic crisis to climate change. Gaddafi suggested creating a NATO of the South and calling it SATO. Chavez cited a new era of unity between the continents as his country signed agreements to work on oil projects with at least 5 African nations.
And Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez made diplomatic inroads in Africa on Sunday at a summit of South American and African leaders. President Chavez offered Venezuela's help in oil projects, mining and financial assistance for the continent. The Venezuelan president and Libya's Muammar Gaddafi led a 30 leaders in agreeing to strengthen South-South ties at the two-day summit.
Flanked by the likes of President Robert Mugabe from Zimbabwe and Lula da Silva of Brazil, summit host and Venezuela's socialist leader Hugo Chavez looked in his element as he had a plethora of proposals.
Now, the person who's going to be speaking on this is Robert Mugabe. He speaks perfect English of Zimbabwe. President Mugabe of Zimbabwe is the one you'll hear speaking with the beautiful British accent.
to promote poor nations' global clout. The two-day summit on Venezuela's sweltering Margarita Island in the Caribbean came right after the UN General Assembly and the G20 summit and was intended as a counterpoint to Western dominance of global institutions. On specifics, President Mugabe and Chavez proposed greater cooperation on exploration of resources like minerals and oil. President Mugabe said Zimbabwe could offer minerals and agriculture products for oil and technology.
Our countries are still...
Okay, he's saying trade, oil and technology from Venezuela for the commodities, the precious minerals from Africa. That's a trade, okay? Now, President Mugabe, speak to us.
Basically agricultural. In Africa, the transformation, qualitative transformation through industrialization has been difficult. Difficult because there has been greater reliance on the very powers that colonized us yesterday. And they have not wanted really to see us industrialize. We have been rewarded in our own way, in his own way, the Lord Almighty. We have lots of minerals, diamonds, gold, platinum, even uranium, chrome, nickel, iron, asbestos even, copper, and so on and so forth. But though that is wealth still underground, we want it to come onto the surface as wealth, as money. And as an association of this nature within the global family in which we find ourselves would assist us tremendously.
Seven South American leaders signed an agreement to create a regional development bank with $20 billion in startup capital, and President Chavez offered to help create a South-South bank with African countries in the future. The leaders also signed a final document late on Sunday covering cooperation between the two continents and urging reform of global bodies like the United Nations and World Bank to give poor countries more influence.
Okay, so later for the G20, later for the UN General Assembly, the Africa-South America Summit is what's up. Okay, here's another story. I wanted to deal with this again. We've talked about the drug trade before in Colombia and how Mexico and all of these countries get stereotyped as being the problem. Did you all know Colombia is the hub for drugs for North America, but for Europe and Britain in particular, it's Peru. Listen up.
Of course, a good deal of the cocaine that ends up in Britain and elsewhere is manufactured in South America, in Peru. And we want to take you there tonight for a rare look inside Peru's cocaine industry. It's in a region controlled by the Maoist guerrilla movement known as the Shining Path. Our report's from Jenny Wibble of ITN, and it shows just how ingrained cocaine is in the culture there.
This is the new epicenter of the world's cocaine production, the Peruvian jungle. And it's where most of Britain's cocaine is manufactured. In maceration pits under the forest canopy, chemists mix coca leaves with acid to produce cocaine in its purest form.
Here we are placing it in the tank with kerosene so that the drug can start coming out. Here the chemicals are mixing and curdling with the drug while he stirs.
According to the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, Peruvian traffickers got away with exporting 282 tons of cocaine last year, making Peru the world's number one exporter.
Most of the cocaine that is produced in Colombia goes towards the North American market. And most of the cocaine that is produced in Peru is now headed towards the European market.
Unlike in Colombia, growing coca leaves in Peru is legal. The government even runs a business called Anaco that buys it for $2 a kilo. The company then sells it on to Andean workers who chew on the leaves to help them acclimatize to high altitudes. But Anaco estimates that 95% of the crops are sold to drug traffickers, who pay more than twice the government rate.
I began growing alternative crops with legal products, but it wasn't cost effective compared to the same effort I put into this line of work. It was leading me into poverty. Now, if the prices improve for other products, then it wouldn't be necessary for me to be making this drug.
Here in the valley of Apurimac and ANA rivers, cocaine production is a way of life. Here, central government law doesn't rule. Instead, authority comes from the guns of the Shining Path, the former guerrilla army that terrorized Peru in the 80s and 90s. Self-defense units, comprised of peasants who were originally armed by the Peruvian government to fight the Shining Path, are now working alongside their former enemies, getting rich on Britain's appetite for cocaine.
Authorities don't come into the area, apart from the local ones we vote for, but the police just don't enter. They don't come, of course, for fear of being attacked by the Shining Path. That's why they never patrol this area.
Over the last 6 months, more than 50 soldiers have been killed trying to gain control of this one valley. With coca even being dried on the doorstep of this army base in Pichari, it appears that some elements of the military have already lost their appetite for a fight.
Of course, cocaine production has increased, and the Shining Path participates in the whole process of its production. They yield it, grow it, they produce coca base, plus they give security to those transporting out of the area.
There are some crops other than coca grown in this poverty-stricken valley, but for most farmers, chocolate and sugar just don't cut it financially. And while Europe's demand for cocaine shows no sign of reaching the end of the line, many believe the only way to crack the cocaine trade here is economic development.
Ooh, interesting info there.